where's Kyle Zimmer? He'll come out for 5 seconds and something will explode. So it's just not good. And then poor Lucas Duda, who always looks like he just that's too mean. He doesn't
like
look
he
good.
Just like he just signed with the Royals.
Yes, pretty much. He is always the last stage of Robert Andino face. And he is is no offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on fantasy keeper and dynasty league formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Excellent start. Good. Yeah. Craig, on a scale from one to Jake Berger's leg, how excited are you to be here tonight?
I'm his Achilles.
Oh, that's not.
I'm about to snap.
Yeah, that's it's too bad we can't make that into a CD because that is perfect. You are the snapped Achilles of a big beefy boy. That should be in your tomb. All right, so pretty good for us. We're recording back to back weeks, which you know we've been getting back into it. I hope everyone is happy. We are, much to Craig's chagrin, going to talk lists. For the penultimate time, only two more list episodes left before we can get into some midseason stuff. But tonight is outfielders, so we are going to talk about Brett's top 125 dynasty outfield rankings. Then we'll talk a little bit about a trade that Brett and I made today in the Dynasty Guru Experts League, and have a little something special for you at the end as well. So, and we also will pick the T-shirt winner live on air today. So, Brett, do you just want to kick it off?
Yeah, let's roll right into the outfield. So, so we're going to try to do this a little bit differently than we've been because we've made a conscious effort to take a little bit less time up front with some of the players that you're already most familiar with, and you probably don't want to hear us rabble on about. So we're going to do just we're going to start with the lightning round, and then we are going to work backwards from there. So at the top of the list, and as the picture on the list, is Mike Trout. So the question for Craig is over under on 3.5. How many more seasons is Mike Trout going to be the number one fantasy player overall the rest of his career?
Over.
Sounds good. All right. So, Ben, you got the lightning question about number two.
I said over while you were talking. I apologize. But did you say player overall or outfielder?
Player, not outfielder.
Oh.
Does that change your answer?
Well, yeah, because hasn't Altuve like out earned him multiple times?
Oh, I don't mean actually in terms of earnings. I mean in terms of being the number one guy drafted on average.
Okay, I'll take over. I'm so good at lightning rounds.
Yeah, they're always gonna there will be fluke years. You're picking it.
All right.
Number two on the list was Bryce Harper. Ben, over under 2.5 on 50 home run seasons for Bryce Harper in his career.
Over because of the environment.
Sounds good. I agree with you on that. I think people are losing sight a little bit of just how good Bryce Harper is, which seems really strange to say. All right, Craig, number three on the list is Mookie Betts. Over under on 21.5 steals this year, 2018.
Ooh, I'm in an optimistic mood today. I'll go over. He's going to run. And Cora runs.
All right. Ben, number four is Ronald Acuna, the guy who has not played a major league game yet. Over under 2019 and a half. When does Acuna become a top 10 outfielder?
Ooh. No, I'll say over. I'll say it's closer to 2020 or 2021 before he breaks fully into the top 10.
Okay. Craig, number five is Cody Bellinger. Mm-hmm. Over under 1.5 seasons that Cody Bellinger hits 300.
Under.
Ben, back to you. Number six is Aaron Judge. Over under 2.5 50 home run seasons for Aaron Judge.
Over.
All right. Craig, number seven is Byron Buxton. 3.5 Over under on 40 steal seasons for Byron Buxton.
Oh, I'm going to take under. I love him, but that's a lot.
Okay. Ben, number eight is Victor Robles.
I think it's Robles.
I think it might be. We should probably ask him out to make sure. over under 2.5 on 20 home run seasons for Victor Robles.
Under.
Sounds good. Craig, Giancarlo Stanton is at number 9. 2.5 over under on seasons played where he has more than 150 games.
150?
150.
Under.
Ben, George Springer is at number 10. We're going to go. Should we stop after Springer or should we go another five deep?
We should stop after Springer. If you say half one more time, I'm getting twitchy.
All right, sounds good. All right, so George Springer, 121 over under on runs scored in 2018.
121?
Yep. I didn't do a half. Because I know you were, unless you want to make the push.
I'm going firm under. He's going to score 119 runs.
Okay. All right. That takes us through the top 10. So the next group has a couple of guys that can be grouped together a little bit. I'm going to group together the first guy and the last guy in this group, and I'm going to go back to Craig. Charlie Blackmon and JD Martinez are sort of the elder statesmen of this tier here. Obviously, Martinez and Blackmon have slightly different risks, but who do you think you'd be happier with as your top outfielder in 2020 and 2021 between these two?
I feel like this is potentially unpopular and perhaps unwise, but I'm going to say JD Martinez. I know it's far into the future. Blackmon is a year older. I think a lot of, I should say, I was going to say a lot of his value is coming in speed, but that was really 2015. He stole 43 bases, and he hasn't cracked 20 since then. I know he's still been really good, but we don't know if he's going to be in Colorado. I don't know if it's reasonable to expect him to maintain like 30-plus homers. And I know Martinez doesn't run, but when we're talking about that far in the future and Blackmon's already stopped running even close to what he used to, I'm going to stick with the guy who can hit 40-plus homers. And even in 2020 and 2 years, I think Martinez is going to be a 35-plus homer guy. And so, you know, he's locked into Boston. I like his contextual factors there. So I'd rather have him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Blackmon is a free agent after 2018. So it is very realistic that this is his last year in Coors. Do we feel confident saying what we think Blackmon will be not in Coors? I mean, we know what he is now in Coors, but does his sort of, you know, he was 331 and 37 homers last year. He was 324 and 29 homers the year before. Is he more of a 310, 25 homer guy outside of Coors? Does that seem close to right? Or is it further of a drop than that?
My problem is that I don't know what to make of him on the power front, and maybe I'm just lagging behind, but like, I don't know if he's a 20, if I'm expecting 25 home runs outside of Coors. I mean, he had 29 homers in 2016 and then 37 last year, but those are the only 2 years he's been over, that he's been over 25 in his whole career. And if he's leaving Coors, I mean, I don't want to put everything on Coors. Like, he's a very good hitter, but I still don't think of him as a power hitter. And I don't know if that's my fault or because he's just been, you know, more of a different guy. I mean, he still hits a majority of the ball on the ground, or he did last year. He had 41% ground balls. That was his highest rate of ground ball, line drive, fly ball. So, like, I don't know that for a guy who puts it on the ground that much, that it's reasonable to anticipate, you know, much more than 25, especially if he's out of Coors. Is that crazy?
No, I don't think that's crazy.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so Ben, I'm going to pair two other guys together who are paired together not just because they're similarly valued, but because they are in similar situations this year, having been jettisoned out of Miami for more favorable situations. Who are you more confident in either keeping or taking the step forward out of Miami between Christian Yelich and Marcell Ozuna?
All right, this is a little bit of a non-answer, but I actually like Ozuna more short-term, but Yelich as the better bet to sort of retain upper echelon value long-term. I think Ozuna's power is real. I don't know how often he'll hit 300, but I don't think he's a bad hitter by any stretch. And I think he's going to do a lot of damage in that lineup. So for the next like 2 to 3 seasons, maybe, I think I actually do prefer Ozuna, but since this is dynasty, if you want to go like 5, 6, 7 years out, I mean, I think Yelich is going to hit for a great batting average forever. And obviously getting to the top of that lineup is in that park is pretty nice too. So, two steps forward. I mean, anytime you're leaving Miami, it's a step forward. Good signs for both of them, but that's sort of how I would break it down. Can I ask you about Benintendi?
Sure.
So you have Benintendi at 13 here in between Yelich and Ozuna and just ahead of JD Martinez and Mazzara. It strikes me as pretty aggressive. Is youth the main thing driving this ranking? Is it his floor? Do you think that he still has star potential? I guess what led you to place him above some guys who clearly have some more impact right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm going to read this straight out of my article, but I wrote in here, don't conflate Benintendi's age and relative performance with future upside. And I think that's a key here. It is his age. He's 23. I think it's a combination of age and floor. I think there's, I don't think there's really many other five category contributors who I think can maintain it, even if they don't have, you know, kind of superstar upside across any position, let alone here. So while I don't think he's going to be more than a 2020 guy, I don't really think he's going to improve all that much out of, above what he did in 2017. But if he can replicate what he did in 2017 for the next, 7 to 8 years, there's a ton of value in that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think if you were going to say there was huge upside left, I might have challenged you a little bit, but I agree on the floor. I'll just say, I think that right now he's a 2020 guy. I think you're going to see that shift to 25-10, 25-15. I actually think he'll hit for a little more power than he has so far. And I don't think he's going to run forever. But totally justifiable. Was just curious given some of the bigger names he's ahead of.
Sure. I mean, the other guy that I kind of pair mentally with Benintendi is Nomar Mazzara, who's at 16. So I know we talk about him a lot on this podcast, so we won't dwell on him that much. But I think it's just important to note just how young Mazzara is. You know, we talk about Benintendi and kind of, you know, showing up on the scene this year, but Benintendi is just about a full year older than Nomar Mazzara. Nomar Mazzara is still 22. He's not going to turn 23 until I believe the end of April. And I guess I'm going to throw this out there. Craig, is Nomar Mazzara's upside any different now than it was 2 years ago?
No. I mean, he's 22. He's hit 40 home runs in his two, you know, full seasons in the majors. He walked almost 9% last year. He's another guy, you know, I harped on Blackman's ground ball rate. He's a guy who's in the up, you know, mid to upper 40s in his ground ball rate. And for a guy, look, I mean, he's not fast. That's the biggest problem you have with Mazzara. He needs to lift the ball more, and he absolutely can. I mean, we've all seen it, and we've seen his raw power and what he can do. So I think as long as he can lift the ball a little bit more, he's going to be the guy we thought he was. And I don't see any reason he couldn't do that.
Yep. So the next two guys on this list after that group is are two guys who were on our prospect, who were prospects last year and were very, were talked about very differently. Clearly they're talked about very differently now, but for different reasons. Do either of you prefer Eloy Jimenez to Rhys Hoskins like I do? Or is this just me being way too stubborn?
No, I'm with you. I mean, and that's no disrespect to Hoskins. I think that's more about what we, I don't want to speak for you, but what we feel Eloy Jimenez is, you know, is capable of.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, a top 20 ranking for Hoskins is certainly not a slight.
Yeah, and I know, you know, I think I know I was down on him and not necessarily buying in last year, him being Hoskins. But there's no denying, obviously, what he did. He was utterly incredible. And I think even if you want to regress it, you're still getting a really, really good baseball player. I think my preference for Jimenez is that I anticipate them having comparable power numbers. And I think Jimenez can hit for a better average. That's really what it comes down to there.
I'm done being a low man on Hoskins. I've had to eat a lot of crow. I would take Hoskins.
Yeah, part of what my preface was is like, you know, I am eating crow on him. I was wrong. I was absolutely wrong about him.
So we all were.
Yeah.
We talked about the echo chamber last week, and that's it's a case where it didn't work out so well.
Yeah, no, it worked out very poorly.
Yeah. Ben, the last two guys in the top 20 on my list are Billy Hamilton, Starling Marte. There's a lot of difficulty in ranking them because they are so speed centric. Does this feel like an appropriate place for them given this current environment, or do you think they should be higher or lower?
I think it's fine. I mean, if you wanted to argue them behind, like, so after this tier, you have Justin Upton, Schwarber, and Puig. If you wanted to put them behind those three instead of here, I think that would be fine. But I would take them over the guys you have after Puig, who are, you know, Polanco, Conforto, Kyle Tucker. I would take them pretty easily over that. So if you wanted to quibble at all, I don't think you could really drop them more than three or four spots.
Okay. Craig, let's do a little bit of a current state of Gregory Polanco right now. Are you still in on Polanco? Do you still believe in him as a solid outfield too?
No, probably not. So I was gonna say in my head I am in on him. But I think relative to other people, I'm probably a little lower at this point. The talent is absolutely still there. But and I know he's kind of been hampered by injuries. But we just haven't seen. He's just not. He wasn't on the field enough last year to make an impact, and he hasn't shown the ability to hit above 260, which is a problem. I mean, the speed is nice, but unless he's had some leg issues over the years, I believe. And so that's going to, hamstring, groin, ankle injuries, stuff like that. That's going to take a toll on the speed. And I think that's kind of his most consistent source of value right now. And I'm just not necessarily, do I think he has the ability to transition from a speed based guy into someone who hits for average and power? Absolutely. I wouldn't have ranked him particularly highly all those years if I didn't think he had the ability to kind of be a factor in every category. But I don't know. I just think we're 4 years into the Gregory Polanco experience, and none of it's been particularly impressive. So I just, at this point, I'm going to say, if I'm going to be stubborn on guys like Hoskins on the way up and say you have to prove it at every level, at some point, like, Polanco has to prove it.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm going to talk for like 10 seconds about Michael Conforto. I think people aren't being quite as concerned as maybe they should be about his injury. It was a very strange and unusual shoulder injury. And the Mets don't have a great track record of getting their injured guys nice and healthy and productive.
That's fair to say. Yep.
Yeah. Am I being too much of a negative person here? Am I being influenced by the fact that I am in the market and I'm exposed to all this Mets stuff?
I mean, I think no, because you still ranked him in the top 25, right? Like, if you had let your fan pessimism drag him down into the 40s or 50s, we'd have a word with you. But I mean, I think 25 is a perfectly reasonable ranking for someone with his upside, but also with his injury history.
If he was perfectly healthy, where would he slot around where Benintendi and Mazzara are? Would he be in consideration for that range for either of you?
I'd probably have him above Hamilton. I've always liked Mazzara more, and I think Benintendi's more well-rounded from a fantasy point of view. But I think I would have him, five, six, seven spots higher.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with Ben. I've never been the Conforto guy, and at times that's looked really bad because he's been really good. But I also think just like the general inconsistency, and now this extremely weird injury is, I don't know. I just look forward to him being traded for like Dilson Lamet in a year and a half.
Oh, that's so mean. Yeah, George is having a stroke right now. He loves Lamet.
Yeah. All right. So let's go with Craig on this question. The next group has four players who are either in the upper minors or just graduated from their prospect status. Mm-hmm. The order that they are ranked in on my list is Kyle Tucker, then Manny Margot, then Lewis Brinson, then David Dahl. Is that the order you would rank them in, just looking at the four of them, or would you rank them differently?
I would probably have Brinson above Margot. I don't know if that's... if that's totally fair. I mean, I think we know I've been a Brinson guy for quite a while. And, Margot did just put up, a 13 homer, 17 stolen base season. But I don't know. I think he can improve in average. I was a little surprised that he got the 13 homers already in his first full season. He had never really done that in the minors. But so the extra pop was certainly nice. But I think Brinson, if he gets a full season, like, it might be a pretty bad average, but I think he can do at least that on the power front, and I think he can I think he can run even more than Margot. So I would opt for Brinson over Margot, but otherwise I think that's fair. And I still love Dahl, but if I'm going to harp on Gregory Polanco's injuries, I can't really excuse Dahl's at this point.
Yeah. Ben, should people be paying more attention than they are to Ender and Ciarte?
I think he's starting to get his due a little bit. I think, you know, as the Braves get better, he will certainly get a little more popular. I think where you have him is fine. I don't really know how to quantify his overall value or his overall perceived value right now. I think I am nervous about talking about the environment and stolen bases anymore on Tino, because if I was a Tino listener, I'd be getting ready to, you know, Mark David Chapman me at this point. But I think in this environment, he is especially valuable, and I think he's really appealing in dynasty leagues because of his floor and age combo. Like, I was thrilled where Craig and I landed him in RDI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where do you remember, which round did you guys land him in?
8 or 9, I think.
Okay.
Let me.
I think it might have been 8. I don't have.
If you want to keep going, I'll look it up, Brett.
Okay. So Craig, at number 34, we've got Lorenzo Cain. At number 35, we've got Tommy Pham. At number 36, we've got Andrew McCutchen.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you most confident in this trio, to continue a high level performance over
Lorenzo
the next
Cain.
2 or 3 years? Lorenzo Cain.
Lorenzo Cain. Yeah.
Sounds good. Do you think
he's really good? And I don't think he's going to stop being good.
What was that?
I said he's really good, and I don't think he's going to stop being good anytime soon.
Do you think being in Milwaukee is going to give him a nice power jump?
I don't think necessarily a huge power jump. I mean, I know the difference between Miller and Kaufman is substantial, but there's probably a decent chance he's going to be 32 this year. So if we're talking about the next few years, he's probably going to lose a little pop anyway. But I think he has a good chance of preserving his recent power numbers, which I know he was only at 9 in 2016, but he missed a good chunk of the season. When he's played, you know, 140, 150 games, he's been at, you know, in the mid-teens, and that's exactly where I'd expect him. If you want to give him, you know, maybe a shot at 18, that makes sense too.
Mm.
But I think he's going to rack up a ton of runs this year. I think he's just – I think that offense is pretty good, and I think he's going to score a ton.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that.
So we got Inciarte at the beginning of round 8. And this was a 20-team draft, so we got him at 141 overall, and I was very happy with that.
Yeah, I think that is I think that's a pretty good value. And I think that does say something about how people are valuing him.
We got him after like Luke Weaver, Gio Gonzalez, Michael Taylor, Jake Arrieta. Pretty happy with that.
Yeah. Ben, give me 2 adjectives to describe Juan Soto.
Next, Acuna with a question mark at the end.
Way to finesse it.
Thank you.
That is not 2 adjectives.
It's 2 words.
You want adjectives?
I said adjectives.
It's 2 words that create an adjective.
Acuna hyphen like, and also good.
Okay. Craig. So
yeah.
The next tier has a couple of guys that we have talked about on this podcast for a very, very long time. None of which have prospect eligibility anymore, but none of which have really established themselves in the majors either. I have them ranked in the order of Clint Frazier, then Nick Williams, then Raimel Tapia.
Mm-hmm.
What order do you have them ranked in?
I'd probably have Williams in front right now, and that's not a shot at Frazier, who I still really like, but his playing time situation is very murky. He's dealing with a concussion right now, which I know wasn't the case necessarily when you ranked him, but like it's a very crowded outfield. I know Gardner is going to be a free agent, I think, after next year, and there's a good chance Ellsbury doesn't last that long, but you've still got Esteban Florial on the way. I don't know. At this point, Williams is going to be the start, a starter in Philly. And I think he's as many flaws as he has, and we've talked about a lot of them despite liking him the whole time. I think as a fantasy player, like there's just less to worry about. And so I don't know. I mean, maybe it's, you know, leading with another guy that Ben and I grabbed in a spot that we really liked in RDI, but I think Williams, I'd have Williams ahead of Frazier, and I'd have Tapia behind both of them.
Okay. Craig, I'm going to stick with you on this. Give me two adjectives to describe Taylor Trammell.
Oh, fast and young. Let's just go with that. I got nothing.
Okay.
I hate adjectives.
Ben. So this next group of outfielders, 51 through 59, has a bunch of guys. There's no one who's really a faraway prospect. We have two prospect eligible players, but they'll both play in the majors this year. Which of these players is most likely to drop outside of the top 100 on this list next year?
Brett, I am not going to talk about Jesse Winker. I'm not doing it. if I would say maybe Haniger, just because – is it Haniger or Haniger?
It's a hard G,
I believe. I didn't – because you just both spoke at the same time, so I don't know what you said.
It's a guy. Yeah.
Okay. I think it could be Haniger because we don't – it was a little bit of a surprise to me. It's not a great place to hit, and I think that we are going to be pretty willing to call him a fluke if he doesn't produce at the same level he did last season. And if I'm not mistaken, he's also already old-ish, right? He's already like 27 or 28 or something. So I think that if he – fails, I don't think we will give him the benefit of the doubt the way we might give it to someone like Winker or Hayes or Michael Brantley or someone like that. And the other candidate I have actually is, I think Mancini is the obvious answer, but Jock Peterson is not trending in a great direction, so I don't have any problem with him still being here right now, but if he is going to hit like 210 forever, he's going to drop like a fly. That's not an, is that an expression? You drop like a fly?
Yes. I think.
When you think about it,
it sounds right.
That's not a very good expression.
Like fruit flies have very short lifespans and they just die.
That's true. All right. Yeah.
What, 24 Craig, hours. Yeah.
Craig, the next two players on this list after that tier are two very toolsy outfielders, and you are our correspondent on the ground for toolsy outfielders.
Sure.
Who do you like better between Leo Di Tavares and Joe Adell?
I like Joe Adell better.
Okay.
He's like more of a five tool guy. I like Tavares, and he's got like pop for his frame, but that's kind of, I mean, he's more of a leadoff guy, and that's all well and good, but if I'm gonna take a guy who's toolsy and far away from the majors and all of that, like, I want to take the guy who has the chance to impact, you know, every category from the middle of the lineup. And that's Adell at this point.
Craig, is it your belief that Adell is the best outfielder in the Angels system?
Why are you doing this to me?
Why would you
make me choose between my beautiful children?
Oh, Mike Trout is your child?
Oh, no, I meant... when you said in the Angels system, I thought you meant the minor leagues.
No, I'm asking you if you think Adell is better than Trout, or if you'd rather, who would you rather own? think you'd rather
have them. No, I'd rather have. In one league, I have both of them. And so, you know.
That's good.
It's going well.
Yeah.
All right. From here on out, we don't need to harp on too many particular players. Ben, is there anyone sort of in the rest of the top 100? And we'll do a quick thing on the guys outside the top 100 after. But is there anyone who you want to talk about either because you think they are interesting or you think they could really shoot up this list next year or should have been higher this year?
I'm just taking a really quick comb through because there are a lot of names here.
There's a lot of names everywhere.
I like Piscotty now that he has a really clear path of playing time. Obviously, Oakland isn't the best place in the world to hit, and it's not an incredible lineup, but I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he's someone ranking 15 to 20 spots higher next year. In terms of like a real helium guy, I don't know. I mean, I guess Jesus Sanchez has a profile. He's not my guy necessarily, but if it clicks for him, he's got the profile of someone who will sort of skyrocket up the list.
All right, Craig, same question for you. And you can talk about Jamai Jones if you want.
No, I mean, I think we've covered him pretty extensively. I think I actually agreed with Ben. Like, Piscotty is a really interesting name who kind of lost some of his luster and is going to get some playing time. I'm really interested to see how that plays out. I think a helium guy, Hylan Ortiz, is definitely already on a lot of radars. I think he got like $4 million from the Phillies a couple years ago. Everyone thought he'd be a first baseman because of his frame, but he's more athletic than you think and has a chance to stay in the outfield. He can really hit, has a lot of power. I also really like Anthony Alford. I think he's kind of gone on and off radars, kind of up and down. He's had a lot of injuries, but Toronto's kind of they have a bunch of outfielders, and he's one of the guys I think in the mix. They just got rid of Ezequiel Carrera, and I think we could see Alford this year, and he's a power speed guy, and I think we're always on the lookout for those. So I know he's a name people know, but I think he's kind of a little bit undervalued right now.
Okay, so let's go all the way to the back of the list. Yeah. There are 25 players between 101 and 125. So I'm going to ask this question slightly differently. Ben, who for your money is the player in this group of 25 outfielders who has the best chance of being a top 50 outfielder in 2 years?
Jesus Christ, that's specific. Oh God, there are so many of them still. It's weird how there aren't fewer since the last 4 seconds ago when I looked. Who could be a top 50 in 2 years?
Yes.
I mean, it's boring because he's right at the top, but if Kyle Lewis got hurt again, right?
The same injury, new surgery.
He had a scope.
No. Okay. I can't pick him then. Oh, can I say no one?
Sure.
I'll say, yeah, I don't think any of them will be top 50 in 2 years because it's all old dudes or guys who in 2 years are still going to be a year away. So I'm going no one. Albert Almora, if he's able to stick in the lineup and all of a sudden he's getting a ton of plate appearances, but that's not something I feel comfortable
with. I mean, to be fair, Ben, like Eddie Rosario is in the top 50 right now.
Okay.
Ian Desmond is in the top 50. So just to give you some sense.
Taylor Trammell and Estevan Florial are in the top 50 also, and they are not in the high minors yet.
Well, all right, then if you're asking who my favorite sleeper is, I guess we've talked about Badu, so I'll say Khalil Lee. Big power speed, upside. The approach isn't exactly what you're looking for yet, but you know, if you want to tell me we view him in 2 years the way we view Monte Harrison now or something, I could buy that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Craig, same question.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of back that suggestion from Ben.
I'm Ben, Craig. It's nice to meet you.
I said Ben.
Yeah, you were struggling for my name, though. That's all I am to you. Just a fleeting memory.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll double what Ben said. I don't love many of the names. I mean, I guess Jaron Kendall has the tools to do it. Jaron Kendall or Brandon Marsh, but I don't know. I don't love either of them. So I think those would be the names I'd pick, but I'm obviously not really into it.
Do you think Enya would take Marsh because that's where her castle is?
Hello and welcome back to episode 102 of Tino. Before Brett and I talk a little bit of strategy about a trade we made in TDGX earlier today, I would like to announce the winner of the Tino 100 XXL Avisail Garcia Scherzi Tino review giveaway. And out of many, many qualified reviewers, I have just selected a random numbers generator. Drum roll, please. Drum, 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 drum. Congrats to... Oh, this is bad. Two people have the same name, and it's one of them. Hold on. We can do this.
This is brutal.
This is... Okay, so congrats to Jeremy. Now, though, you just have this terrible moment of tension because there were two Jeremys. So if you are not the Jeremy who won, I am sorry. But congrats to Jeremy N. Jeremy N., whose review has the nickname... Hunter who killed 9,999 rats. Your 5-star review and your adding us on Twitter has made you the winner of a XXL Avisail Garcia White Sox jersey from 2014. So just get in touch with me at Ben Carsley on Twitter, and I will follow you back, and we can DM about the best way to get you this XXL
Garcia jersey. You're not going to read it?
The review?
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Title is Who Can Say Where the Road Goes? Review on a scale of Derek Jeter to Raleigh Fingers. This podcast is firmly Danny Espinosa, which is maybe a little bit harsh, but also not unfair. So, Jeremy, let me know if you want me to sign the Avisail Garcia XXL jersey or if you want it in mint condition. That choice is entirely yours. Congratulations and thank you for listening. Sorry, other Jeremy. That's a bad break. I think only like 7 people did this and there were 2 Jeremys. That's just brutal. So other Jeremy, you can also reach out to us. And while we do not have a jersey coming, we'll try to make it up to you.
Also shout out to the guy who did it on Stitcher because like we're a shitty podcast. And so he did it to the off brand podcast.
I did appreciate that. Although yeah. iTunes kind of sucks with podcasts now. So I don't know. I might give Stitcher a try.
All right. It's the Tino of,
yeah, podcast well, apps. When your current podcast sucks, you're like, oh, well, might as well try something that fewer people use. All right. So the supplemental draft in TDGX is happening right now, and how our league is set up is that you cannot sign guys who are basically new to MLB organized baseball as the year goes. So, for example, you know, Luis Robert, or however he feels like pronouncing it today, was not available for us to sign. Obviously, none of the J2 guys from last year, none of the 2017 draftees. So we have to wait until the end of the year to have a sort of supplemental draft for those players. So that's happening right now in TDGX. I had the 8th overall pick in this year's draft, and Brett had the 12th. And I went against my better judgment, and I made a trade with Brett. So the first 7 picks, opening up the draft now. I am nothing if not prepared. This is just Jeremy all over again. So the first 7 picks in this draft, I don't think the names would shock anybody. They were Shohei Ohtani, Luis Robert, Hira, Royce Lewis, who thank you, Royce Lewis's mom, for retweeting our article. Very sweet of you. Joe Adell, sorry, Craig, Helio Ramos, Brendan McKay. So then the draft came to me at 8. And as you may or may not know, Brett is a fan of Mackenzie Gore. And I knew this. So Brett traded me his first overall pick, which was 12. So 4 spots later, and his 3rd round pick for my first round pick and my fifth round pick. So Brett, talk me through the thought process from your end, other than just, I really like, Mackenzie Gore.
Sure. So, you know, so I was monitoring the draft as it was happening, and everything was kind of unfolding the way I thought it would. The top five was, you know, just chalk. Number six is where kind of the draft starts to diverge a little bit. I have Gore ranked sixth of all the players available in this draft. And Helio Ramos went six, which is totally defensible. He's got, you know, huge upside, and he's not a pitcher. But after that, it is really, I think, a noticeable drop off after that first group. And when I think it was Jeff Zimmerman at seven took Brendan McKay, I started poking around to see what it would cost to move up four spots, just because Gore was, I think in my personal rankings, I think Gore was probably 25 to 30 spots higher than the next guy available. And I'm, as Ben said, I'm a big fan. So, it is a nice reminder to, both myself and to our listeners that, you know, even if you are not picking inside the top 10 this year, because of how the talent of the draft shakes out, and we'll get a little further down, because I want to talk about where Craig is right now. But even if you are not in the top 10,
I don't want to talk about where I am.
Me and Ben are going to talk about it.
Okay, fair enough.
Even if you don't think you have a chance of getting any of the top guys on your board, keep monitoring the draft and pay attention to what is going on, and you may have the opportunity to get a guy that you might like more than some other people. I mean, I know I like Gore more than Ben does, and I think I'm a little bit lower on the other guys that were available next than Ben is. So I think the structure of the first round at that point was a little flatter for him than it was for me, and he took advantage of it, and he got a guy that he wanted. And that, I guess the question is, Ben took Luis Garcia at 12, who was the first player taken who was not actually a 2017 draft pick. Would you have taken Garcia at eight?
No, I would have taken Gore. I just didn't want to. It's not as fun to me. I had Gore as the best player left, but I don't have the gap between Gore, Green, and Baz anywhere near as large as you do. So once I gave up on Gore, Garcia was definitely my target, but I wouldn't have... I wouldn't have been really, really kicking myself if one of Green or Baz had fallen to me. And it turns out that the selections in between your pick and my pick were Green, Kyle Wright, and Austin Beck. So the only way I would have been really mad at myself is if somehow they had gone like Green, Baz, Garcia. But I was I liked my odds of that not happening, especially because this is a very good league filled with experts. But I did think my odds of getting someone like Garcia were better, just because people might not have their headspace there. I mean, that's how I got Wilson Contreras a few years ago. He wasn't a new addition to the player pool. People had just sort of overlooked him. So that's where my thought process was. And then, they're never that deep. These supplemental drafts are never that deep, but I feel like this is especially a pretty shallow year. And now I have four picks in the top 52 players selected. And keep in mind, these don't have to all be new additions to the player pool. So maybe one or two of the guys I take are prospects, but there are all sorts of, you know, setup men and quasi interesting infielders or outfielders who might have been forgotten. So, my roster is very top heavy. I had trouble filling out the back of it. So getting some more reasonable talent in this stage of the game is pretty important to me.
Yeah. So, you know, the talent clearly does drop off noticeably after, depending on where the tiers are. I mean, I had when I wrote out the top 50 that got posted in January, I had a gap after the top six, and then I had another gap after the top 11. And I think, you know, I think once you get beyond the top 11, and it's really a top 10 now because of the Jake Berger injury. So missing the whole year of development with a, you know, pretty serious leg injury is not ideal. And I think it probably drops him into the, you know, sort of 15 ish range where he was number 9 on my list originally. So, you know, there is, you get to the point now where there is a limited draft pool and you have to look at options that you don't really like. So, so Craig, you're on the clock now. What are you thinking?
Am I on the clock? I thought,
Oh, you're almost. No, on.
There's one pick before you. So
someone good will go. Someone, well, maybe not good. Someone better than who I want is, I don't know. I hate where I am. And I will gladly trade out of it. Do you guys want this pick?
I'll take it for free.
No, not for free. Give me someone good, and you can have
that is tempting. Do you want Matt Davidson?
No, super, super down. He was declared by James Fegan the king of spring. So
keep there we go. There we go. Yeah, you are in a tough spot, Craig. It's not fun.
It's not good. I really thought there was a chance Bubba Thompson would be there. Just needed a few people to take guys I like less. That didn't happen. That did not. James Breen took him. It was rude as hell.
Brutal. Just brutal.
Brett, I don't know what you want me to say here. I told you. I don't.
No, that's it. I just really wanted.
It's a shitty spot. To hear. I don't know what.
I wanted our listeners to hear the dejection in your voice.
Thank you.
That's really the most important part of this analysis.
Like this, on top of having to discuss 40,000 outfielders, I just miserable.
I mean, some of the names at the top of the queue right now, the like auto-populated CBS queue: James McCann, Rajai Davis, Adam Lind, Daniel Descalso.
If you want to know where I'm at mentally, like I have considered just like taking Jose Martinez, or is he's available, right?
Yes, he is available. He was not kept.
I don't know. Just he's probably, he doesn't even have a starter's role in St. Louis, but like he might be good. I don't know. He might be a weird guy who's all of a sudden good at 30. It's terrible.
Craig, you want to roll into the final topic?
Oh, I'm doing it.
We each did one. It's your turn.
Well, I think Ben's got it.
Or Ben can do it.
Okay. Well, since we're talking about bad teams like Craig's, which is where Craig's was better.
Okay, my team isn't bad.
No, that's in fact why you are drafting after us. Because your team was better than ours. But we were talking a little bit pre-podcast about some of the saddest rosters in baseball. Brett, do you have a third sad roster you want to argue, or do you want to be the sort of arbitrator for Craig and I arguing?
No, I have a third sad roster.
Okay. So we are all going to make an argument for what we think the saddest roster in baseball is right now, and then we will let the loyal listeners decide. Do you want to go first, Craig? I think you do have – you probably have the leader in the clubhouse, so I think it's only fair if you go first.
Yeah, although – I don't know. I've been thinking about it, and I don't know if I'm as solid in my resolve right now. But, I mean, how do you not go with the Marlins? They traded away 3 all-star outfielders. I know there are some interesting guys there, but, like, their leadoff hitter as of right now is Derek Dietrich. And I don't – think we have to go much further than that.
It's not good.
Like JT Riddle features prominently in their plans. I think that's a problem. Odrysamer Despaigne is in their rotation right now.
I don't want to make an argument for you.
Not.
Yes. I mean per roster resource he is.
I didn't want to make your argument for you, but I wasn't sure how you were not leading with the rotation in Miami.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Jose Urena, number two starter. Dylan Peters. I'm not sure I know who that is.
Like, I don't know who Dylan Peters is. I don't know.
He sounds like someone who would be on 90210. I don't understand.
He sounds like a computer-generated number four starter from, like, the show 04.
I appreciate also the show 04 reliever, Chris O'Grady. I don't know.
Like, what? He's got all 45 pitches across the board, but he's got five of them. All right, so I think Marlins are the obvious choice. I'm going to argue it's the Royals for two reasons. One of which is the sort of emotional appeal, because this roster was much better more recently than the Marlins were. So part of it is, I guess, just the juxtaposition between, you know, how awesome this roster was for a few years and where it is right now. But don't let that argument detract you from the sheer poopiness of the current roster, because it's not purely an emotional argument. We have starting center fielder in 2018, Paul Orlando. That's good. We have the sentient remains of Alex Gordon hanging out in left field, which is basically just a reminder that we're all going to die. We have Alcides Escobar somehow back at shortstop, now blocking one of the only promising young players on the Royals. So that's good, because we got to make sure he can get on base at a 260 clip and airmail a throw every once in a while. Can't block that. Chesler Cuthbert is at third base.
Don't hurt on the man him. From. Don't. Yeah, I believe he's from Big Corn Island.
Definitely from Big Corn Island.
Yeah, and he's more from there every year. And then the rotation also not good. Danny Duffy probably already hurt. Number two starter Ian Kennedy, and he's the clear number two starter. It's not like, oh, you might prefer someone else. No, because then it goes to Jason Hamill, Nate Carnes, who is still hurt, and then I don't know. Jesse Hahn is maybe the most interesting name on the rest of this list. Craig will tell us it's Trevor Oakes, because Trevor Oakes used to be a Dodger. It's not interesting.
I think you're right on the more interesting aspect. Jake Junis is currently in the roster resource rotation right now. I don't think he's different than Nick. I think he's the same person as Nate Carnes. Like, I think Nate Carnes asexually reproduced and it turned into Jake Junis.
Willie Peralta is in this bullpen so that he can walk more people. Jesus Christ, where's Kyle Zimmer? He'll come out for 5 seconds and something will explode. So it's just not good. And then poor Lucas Duda, who always looks like he just that's too mean. He doesn't look good.
Like he just signed with the Royals?
Yes, pretty much. He is always the last stage of Robert Andino face. And he's the marquee addition. So that's my argument for this being sad. Oh, and if you want to bust, Jorge Soler is around too. So we really filled it out.
Hey, we could see Bubba Starling this year.
Oh, God, we could.
That would be amazing.
Bubba Starling will manage Bubba to strike Starling out against and Hunter Kyle Dozier Zimmer, even if could Kyle Zimmer up. Never throws a pitch. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Brett, who you got?
All right, I am going to throw the Tigers into the ring here. Sure. I think it's
a natural option.
I think it's wrong not to. The Tigers have on offense, they have two hitters projected to be above average across their entire lineup. One is projected to be above average by 1/1000th of a point in true average, and that is Jaime Candelario, who I actually kind of like. But he is legitimately the second best hitter on this team.
I don't think that's actually true in real life.
Yeah. Who do you think is the second best hitter on this team?
Castellanos or Victor Martinez?
Okay. They are both projected for lower true averages. I think.
I understand.
Castellanos can't get on base. He's more fun in fantasy. He can't get on base. Victor Martinez walks up to the batter's box with a walker.
I think he's a better hitter this year, maybe.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. And the one good hitter they have is Miguel Cabrera, whose career might be basically over because of chronic back injuries. Hopefully it's not. I actually kind of like his chances of bouncing back a little bit, but but there is nobody even close to as good as him on this team. This lineup features James McCann. It features Dixon Machado at second base. Jose Iglesias. It features Jacoby Jones. It features Matuk. It features Leonis Martin, who only has a job because the Tigers exist.
It's going to be their leadoff hitter this year.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And then you get to the pitching side, and things don't get much better from there. Michael Fulmer is totally fine for as long as he stays healthy for. Your number two starter is Jordan Zimmermann, who may or may not be alive. Your number three starter is Daniel Norris, who is not good. Number four is Mike Fiers, whose career should have been over three times by now. And their fifth starter is Matt Boyd, who is a shitty version of Daniel Norris.
Did you mention Liriano? Did he just sign?
I did not.
He just signed, so he's in the mix.
He is in the mix, and he is probably the most exciting pitcher they have.
After Fulmer.
I guess. Fulmer, Lirion is exciting. He's not better than Fulmer, but at least he's interesting.
The Tigers also have very sad uniforms to me when they're bad. Like, when they're good, you can make the argument that they're sort of, you know, historically relevant uniforms, like the old-timey thing can kind of play up. But when they're bad, you just have a bunch of fucking sad dudes running around in beige knocking each other over. And it's just not good. The aesthetic is very poor. I feel like a lot of Tigers are fat, too. I don't know why. So she's got, like, fat, baggy pants, and there's, like, an off cream color, and then you look up and you're in Detroit. It's just not a good situation.
So pretty much every player to you is like Bobby Higginson?
Yeah, pretty much, actually.
See, I was going to say, like, I agree, Ben. Like, when they're bad, it's all very dreary, and, like, it kind of looks like they are old-timey players playing against current-day players, and you're like, well, it's just not fair.
It's all either Bobby Higginson or Ramon Santiago. Like, it's either just, like, a utility infielder stretched into duty in the middle infield somewhere, or like a four corners guy who's going to resurface with the A's in 18 months, and he's not going to make it there either. But that's their entire team, and it just makes me.
But when they're good, I will say this: when they're good, I think their uniforms are beautiful. Like, I think they have, I don't know, I objectively think they're good uniforms, but I do think it's absolutely tinged by how they play.
I think they have the strongest disparity in home versus away. I think.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Home uniforms are good. They're away uniforms.
I can get with that.
Looks like you ran out of crayons or something, and you just had to keep using brown.
Okay, before we move off of this, this is going to be a quick fun game that we're going to play. Both of you guys don't look at the roster. How many relievers in the Tigers bullpen can you name? Let's start with Craig.
Well, Shane Green is the closer.
Okay. Yes. Ben.
Alex Wilson.
Craig.
Joe Jimenez, is he in the bullpen?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe. But he could be. So, Ben.
Is Al Albuquerque still there?
No.
Nope. He's not. Craig, you win. Congratulations.
Yes!
Oh, that's so shitty.
Do you need another guess? Do you need...
I mean, if you want to, you can.
Do you have more? I think I got one more, so I don't know.
All right. Who you got?
No, I'll let Ben... I'll let Ben chime in, because if he has my guy, then we're even.
I know this isn't right, but in my eyes, no one embodies the 2018 Tigers like Phil Koch. Phil Koch is still just going to be wearing baggy-ass visiting Tigers pants, even when he's at home, throwing 64 innings looking like he just came off fucking like chain-smoking break. So even if he's not, my answer is Phil Koch.
I believe Buck Farmer is still around.
Oh,
yikes. He is.
Yeah,
I thought you were gonna go with. I thought you were gonna go with Daniel Schlereth.
Oh God, is Kyle Sleeth still doing things?
I don't believe so. He's not on the depth chart that I'm looking at.
It was a joke. He's very washed out of baseball. No, the one after Buck Farmer, I was gonna go with is Joel Zumaya.
Well, that's a little, that's obvious. I thought you were going to go with something a little more challenging, like Enya. Welcome back to episode 102 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever platform you use to listen to us. It is true that there is no longer a potential double XL Abascal Garcia jersey as your reward, but you should still do the right thing. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at BrettSayerVP. You can find Craig at CD, that's CD as in crummy draft spot, Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
Trying to get, and I want to trade my pick now. Do you guys want it?
No. Sorry, Craig.
This is a terrible spot.
TDGX burn. Oh.
It's a bad spot. That's Brett. I knew you knew I was like not. I was lying when I was like, all right, I'm just gonna ask around for the pick. I was like, I'm not trading back any fucking further than Brett's pick. It's either. Either I'm making the deal with you or I'm not bothering.
Well, you still knew there were a couple guys you were going to get. I mean, you were going to pretty much have your choice of Garcia or Green. I thought you were going to have your choice of them.
I thought Green would get. So I obviously Garcia was my plan A, and
we were going to do this as a next step.
Yeah, we should probably actually talk about it. Yeah, okay.
All right. Let's start recording again.